Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 3rd of August 2015, the podcast that doesn't call him Shirley. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week is Travis Retriever. Travis, welcome back to the podcast.
Great to be back.
Let's transmogrify the news of the bogus. And you know, as we record this, yesterday was my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Do you feel like singing happy birthday to me?
I do, yeah.
Well, you can't, because for so many decades, this has been a problem. The happy birthday to you song that each of us sings all the time in birthday parties all over the country has been copyrighted. At least that's what Warner Chappell Music has been claiming. Now, the interesting thing about this is the people who know about the song know that it was written back in the 1800s. And if it's made before 1927, it's supposed to be public domain. So how on earth can they claim a copyright? Well, there was this one production company that formed as Good Morning to You Productions, and Good Morning to You was the original iteration of the song, and they were doing a documentary about the song, and they didn't think that they should have to pay Warner Chappell a royalty to use this song that to any sane individual should be in the public domain. So they have been actually spending a lot of money taking Warner Chappell to court over this, far more than they would have spent to just pay the royalties, because, you know, to them it's a matter of the principle.
Mm-hmm. Gotta love people with principle.
So, last year they did all the discovery documents, and now they've been going through the trial, and they're just like weeks away from the judge maybe giving a decision, when all of a sudden Warner said, oops, it looks like we have some documents here that we should have given you a year ago but didn't. Sorry, it was an accident, we promise.
Right.
And an interesting thing is one of these is the Good Morning and Birthday song, and it's the sheet music. It has the melody line, and then it has the lyrics for each version. And this is the version that was published in 1935 that was supposedly copyright. And since 1935 is after 1927, they're claiming that's the first publication date. Now, other people, more sane people, have argued, well, all they could really copyright there is just that particular piano arrangement of it, because it looks like, just to the sheet music, they've written it in the key of A flat, and I think most people sing it in the key of C, so it's not even like the version that most people sing. But they say, no, this is the entire song, music and lyrics, being copyrighted.
So basically, we're dealing with people who are saying, okay, well, we invented the wheel, ergo we can claim ownership of the whole car. Herpader.
Well, they argue that it hadn't been published before then, and copyright goes from the date of first publication. That's what they were arguing.
I mean, how long is this copyright supposed to last anyways? I mean, if it's been that long, you think it wouldn't be over by now?
Basically, if it's a corporate copyright as opposed to an individual, then as long as it's 1927 or after, it's still copyrighted. If it's an individual copyright, it's something like 75 years after the death of the author or something ridiculous like that.
So, basically, they're both completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, folks, look up who first lobbied for copyright laws. Hint, it wasn't the poor songwriters and inventors trying to get back their returns.
Yeah, so the idea is, this was a publication that belonged to the Clayton F. Summey Company, and they claim that there was no prior publication, no prior permission for anyone else to publish it. Well, one of these new documents seems to put the lie to that. According to Good Morning to You Productions, quote, on July 13th, 2015, defendants gave plaintiffs access to a database of approximately 500 pages of documents, including approximately 200 pages of documents they claim were mistakenly not produced during discovery, which ended on July 11th, 2014, more than 1 year earlier. And this is a 1927 publication of the Everyday Songbook, and it has the Good Morning and Birthday song with the tune and the lyrics. And there's a line that's kind of smudged and is not very legible, which is interesting because no other part of this page has been blurred like that.
Weird.
So what they did was they looked around and they found the original copy of the Everyday Songbook, and this was the 15th edition, and they found a much cleaner version. Now remember, their claim rests on the fact that the Clayton F. Summey Company had never given anyone prior permission to publish the song. This line says, quote, special permission through courtesy of the Clayton F. Summey Company.
Oh, they have just been caught in a lie.
And it gets better, because 1927 means that it's still copyrighted. But if it's before 1927, it isn't. They kept doing some research. They found the fourth edition published in 1922, and the song is in there too.
Nice.
So that makes it before 1927, which means it's public domain. Even if that weren't the case, nowadays, things are basically copyrighted automatically when you publish them. But that wasn't the case in 1922. You were still under the 1909 Copyright Act, which a different court in Twin Books Corporation versus Walt Disney Company found, quote, at a minimum, Section 18 of the 1909 Copyright Act required the notice to include the word copyright, the abbreviation COPR, or the copyright symbol, as well as the year of first publication and the name of the author of the copyrighted work. If the strict notice requirements of the 1909 Copyright Act were not met, the published work was interjected irrevocably into the public domain. And there is no such copyright statement here.
Wow.
So doubly, it's public domain. Now, in addition to that, the plaintiffs had argued that the original author, Patty Hill, she herself had likely put the work into the public domain. Quote, publication of the Good Morning and Birthday Song in the Everyday Songbook in 1922 and thereafter, with summary's authorization but without a copyright notice, is fully consistent. Oh, and by the way, they give you the other pages of the book so you can look through, and other things that are published that are copyrighted have the full copyright notice, but this one doesn't. So, anyway, is fully consistent with plaintiff's position that the Happy Birthday lyrics had been dedicated to the public many years before then. Because the lyrics were in the public domain, there was no reason for a copyright notice to be set forth in the songbook. Moreover, the authorized publication of the Good Morning and Birthday Song in 1922 without a copyright notice is also fully consistent with plaintiff's position that the 1935 copyrights covered only the specific piano arrangements written by Summey's employees Orem and Foreman, as well as the second verse written by Foreman. Since the lyrics were already in the public domain long before 1935, there was nothing else to be copyrighted other than the new work that Summey's employees contributed when those copyrights were registered. So the judge still has to rule, but this seems pretty much like case closed to me.
What I'm wondering is, what are the odds of him just saying, oh, but this doesn't count because potato, and, well, yeah, basically because they're corporate cronies, because why not?
Yeah, and you never know what judges are going to do. And a lot of times you look at the judges in these cases and they used to work for or even be partners in law organizations that did work for Warner and all these other big corporate giants. So I don't know if that's the case with the judge in this case or not, but I mean, you see that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was you who once told me that judges are basically just politicians in robes. It's a shame they don't wear the wigs anymore. That'd be awesome.
Well, I think it's also an example of how government really doesn't stay limited. The Constitution says that copyrights are just for limited times, and they initially made it like 15 years so that you'd have a good portion of your life to profit from it, but then you'd also have plenty of time to come up with something else, you know, write a new book or whatever. Or compose a new symphony, or whatever it is.
Well, I mean, 120 years after your death, or whatever it is technically limited in the sense that it's less than infinity, but I mean, come on! Good grief!
Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level. Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers, backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.pagosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.pagosity.tv and get LastPass now. So also in copyright news, and we've talked extensively about the DMCA, and one of the most earliest things that I got attention for online was when I wrote a song called The Computer Code Hoedown that was a response to a court case under the DMCA that ruled that computer code was not free speech. And so I sang the computer code in question, so it's like, okay, if it's not free speech, how can I sing it? You know, it's speech, you know, duh. But the reason for that trial was because they were trying to stop a DVD player to be written for the Linux operating system, because DVDs were made with DRM. If you had an encrypted DVD, you had to have the decryption keys in order to just be able to play it.
And people wonder why piracy is such a thing these days. You're not supposed to punish the guy who's doing it legally. I mean, come on. You're supposed to reward them for doing what you want.
But believe it or not, this encryption was so bad, because they rolled their own crypto, and you never roll your own crypto, it ended up being cracked by Jan Johansson, a 15-year-old in Norway.
Oh,
and he wrote this computer code in question called DCSS, D-E-C-S-S, meaning taking away the CSS, the content scrambling system. And so the idea was, we're going to do this so that we can play DVDs that we legally purchased, that are ours, that we own on our Linux machines. Except that Hollywood wanted you to buy one of their licensed DVD players. And so what they said at the time was that the DMCA prevents this circumvention of DRM, even if it's for a perfectly legal purpose.
Don't you just love the way they word this, though? Like, oh, well, this particular law prevents it, not the people with guns. I mean, I swear these people just ascribe magical powers to words on paper.
That's a good point.
Like, by their logic, I should be able to write, like, I have my grocery list here, eggs, olive oil, coconut, cottage cheese, and okay, it'll be the law that this stuff is to magically appear in my house for free. Dang it. I guess I just have to legislate harder. Why isn't it working?
Well, anyway, there's good news from the Fifth Circuit Court in New Orleans, and this is Judge Emilio Garza, has sided with those who say, no, you get to bypass DRM as long as you're not pirating. Quote, the owner's technological measures must protect the copyrighted material against an infringement of a right that the Copyright Act protects and not from mere use or viewing. Now, a lot of this has to do with fair use, and this has been a huge criticism of the DMCA, that it basically destroys fair use, and everyone says, well, oh, no, it doesn't, but that's how they've been using it, because you have fair use, for example, to use clips from something for purposes of criticism or commentary, as long as you don't use any more than you have to, and there are a few other restrictions as well. But the problem is you have to copy it to be able to do that. And so apparently that's the big thing here. This judge is saying, no, you can't stop someone from viewing the material or listening to it, whatever. And you can't stop someone from exercising their fair use rights to the material. And people are looking at one case that might be affected by this. Real Networks, not a company I'm a big fan of. You know, they're the ones that make the Real Player and everything. But they made the Real DVD copying software and also a hardware prototype to rip DVDs to a user's hard drive and host them as a media server. And I've done that because if you have kids, you know, kids break DVDs. So you just rip them to a server, you know, and then they can watch them on their phones or on the smart TV or whatever.
way back in the day, it was actually Sega who did something monumentally stupid with their CDs. They put the copy protection on the outer rim of the disc instead of the inner rim.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And people were taking Sharpies and just kind of going around the outer edge and they could completely bypass it.
Oh, that is just awesome. And speaking of the DMCA, I mean, I still remember, like, way back when in 2006 through 2009-ish, when you and the other YouTube atheists were going up against, you know, folks like Ken Hovind, Venom Phoenix, etc., and there was this huge hoopla of them creationists and them constantly using the false DMCAs to censor their critics.
And that hasn't stopped. We've talked about the anti-vaxxers using it against Miles Power.
Oh, my assholes. And I remember an amazing video you did regarding the DMCA that said, no, this is not it being abused. This is its design.
Exactly. They want to make life as difficult as possible for people who are trying to produce content that doesn't go through their distribution system.
Yeah, basically a bunch of dinosaurs trying to defend their long-dated distribution system and business model.
Yeah. Remember, look at what happened, see who benefits, and see if those people who benefit were behind it. And guess what?
Indeed.
Yep. But, I mean, there's other similar software to this. VLC will actually let you view a DVD. And if you use Handbrake while something like VLC is also installed, even if VLC isn't running, Handbrake can use its libraries, its decryption keys and everything else, to let you actually not only rip the DVD, but also store it in a more compact format. And there's also a classic piece of software called DVD Shrink. It's been version 3.2 like forever because the developers just thought it was too much of a hot potato just to keep working with. So they said, okay, just everyone keep using this version and we're not going to do anything with it anymore. But this might change all of that.
Also, what was the name of that software you said? I might have to look into that just because I actually use VLC player or whatever it was. And yeah, I love it.
Yeah, Handbrake is the one that will let you. It's really just a converter. And it's not a big, full-featured converter like the FreeMake tools, which I also like, but it's really good at making standard MP4 and MKV files using H.264 video and AAC audio. It's perfectly standard. I can convert a video with Handbrake, and everyone can see it on their computers. We can see it through our smart TVs, through our phones and tablets, and it just works everywhere.
Nice. Oh, and just a small disclaimer to those listening. No, we don't endorse any specific products or anything and all that. We're just, you know, sounding off about this or that or good experiences we've had.
Yeah, these are just examples. Now, Judge Marilyn Patel had ruled against them. But now, Judge Garza's ruling may say, hey, you know, as long as that's what you're doing, you know, putting it onto the computer so you and your family can view it, then that should be fine. But, of course, the MPAA had something to say about it. Their spokesstooge, Elizabeth Kaltman, said, quote, "We believe the court's decision is inconsistent with the plain language of the DMCA's anti-circumvention provisions." Well, maybe the DMCA's anti-circumvention provisions were inconsistent with things like the Constitution and fair use and stuff like that.
And the NAP, but, you know.
Well, sadly, the NAP isn't law.
True.
But Michael McGuire, Vice President of Research at Gartner, had some really good comments on this, quote, "The larger question is, will we see content companies work with providers like iTunes, Netflix, Amazon, and Google to create the kind of content delivery options consumers will use so they won't think about contravening the DMCA? Consumers may not want to view content only on the medium the providers dictate, such as their computers. They may want to move it to their smartphone or other device they feel more comfortable with. Why not make it easier for consumers to get content instead of relying solely on DRM technologies?"
Well said, McGuire.
Yeah, and he's absolutely right. I mean, and it's like everyone else has got this idea. Years ago, the music industry stopped putting DRM on there, so if you buy music, you can listen to it on your phone or your computer or wherever.
Yep, I have mine on an iPod, my computer, and both of my phones.
I haven't even seen DRM, at least that I've noticed, on ebooks.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm pretty sure The Martian didn't have it. I also read L. Neil Smith's Confederacy series. I don't think any of them had it, but I mean, he is a libertarian, so he just may be against it on principle. But the thing is, I like getting the EPUB files from Barnes & Noble, but I don't like reading them on the Nook Player. I want to read them on Aldico. That's the one that I like. And if it has DRM on it, I have to go through this whole rigmarole. You know, I have to get special software. I use Calibre on my PC to do it. And you put in your email address and the credit card number you used to pay for it, and somehow that gets converted into the encryption key. Then you save the decrypted version, move it over to your phone, and then you can pull it up in Aldico.
So basically, it's a completely unnecessary and oversized mess and convoluted BS.
Right. But I haven't seen on it on any ebooks that I've purchased in the last couple of years. So maybe the ebook publishers are going against it as well. It really just seems to be the movie industry that's the big holdout.
Well, and the gaming industry. Let's not forget about them.
But the gaming industry seems to be alone in this, because software makers used to be just crazy about finding all sorts of kooky ways to stop people from copying digital files. But, I mean, I don't even know when the last time a software company other than games did anything like that. You can copy it, you just have to have a valid license.
And speaking as a furry, I noticed that a lot of furs tend to be a little bit crazy about the art, in that, it, you know, like if they see someone using or posting art that isn't theirs or made for them, they tend to go a little bit crazy, you know, art theft, and just basically go completely nuts over it. So there's another digital file thing right there. Of course, this works about as well as you'd think, but the only issue I have with that is, since a lot of us tend to use those as our online identities, or a mask rather, for that, you could argue that it's more like an issue of them impersonating someone online. Like, say, if I took your name and then used your avatar as mine, for example.
Yeah, and you were pretending to be me. Yeah, that's an issue. And it is worth pointing out that likeness rights are different from copyrights.
I mean, it's one thing if they're posting artwork or whatever that they claim is theirs when it isn't, or claiming to be an artist, or even asking for donations for artwork that they're posting that wasn't theirs. I mean, yeah, that's one thing if we're talking about plagiarism and the latter of those being fraud, but that's completely separate from IP in its entirety.
Yeah, and I think in a digital age when people are using these specific pieces of artwork that they've custom made for themselves and saying, this is me, there might be a case where you could say, hey, that violates the likeness rights. I don't think my avatar would count, since I just grabbed it from still from Forbidden Zone. It's Danny Elfman as Satan from that movie. But, you know, something like...
I was thinking about your Skype avatar, though, the one that's a picture of you, I mean.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, if someone grabbed that picture and made a Facebook page or Instagram or something else saying, hey, I'm Shane Killian. Yeah, that would be an issue.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I mean, even if it's just artwork, like Lord T. Hawkeye, you know, had his comic book art, the woman who does the comic book art for his comic book, he had him do a likeness of Lord T. Hawkeye that he uses as his avatar. I think that would count too if someone grabs that and pretends to be Lord T. Hawkeye. So that's different from copyright. That's likeness rights, and there might be room to do that with digital identities as well as real-world identities. If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government censors. It's essential in this day and age, so go to vpn.pugosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world, and they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.pugosity.tv. We talked about the kangaroo trial of Ross Ulbricht, whom they accused of being Dread Pirate Roberts and sentenced to life in prison. Well, there was one dealer on Silk Road who helped convict them, and this is Michael Duck or Duke. I'm not sure how that last name is pronounced. It's D-U-C-H.
Yeah, I see that. I would think Dutch, but then it doesn't have a T in it.
Well, whatever. He never had anything to do with Ulbricht or anything like that. He never interacted with Dread Pirate Roberts. But he was brought forth to say that Silk Road was creating new drug dealers and therefore new drug users, which is a really twisted chain of logic with a lot of skipped steps there.
Yeah.
So anyway, ordinarily, he'd be looking at a minimum sentence of 5 years. That's the mandatory minimum. And he could have faced a maximum of 40 years in prison.
So more than a murderer or a rapist, basically.
Yeah. And since it's a mandatory minimum, he can't get early release. So, I mean, no matter what, he would have served out the 5 years. But since he was helping them testify against Ulbricht, his sentence is only 2.5 years. And since he gets credit for the amount of time he's already spent in prison, he may only spend another 9 months in prison.
It's the law. We have to follow the rules, unless it's for something we need or like or that benefits us, in which case it's for our good, and for your own good, herpader.
How is this not witness tampering? I want someone to answer that question. You're looking at 5 years in jail, but if you go up on the witness stand and say what we want, we'll drop it to 2.5.
How is this not a bribe?
If the defense did anything remotely resembling that, the defense attorney would be disbarred.
Indeed. They probably would have thrown a book at them. I mean, are you kidding? They wouldn't have thrown the book at them. They would have thrown the whole library at them.
Yeah. A law library, which has a lot of books in it.
You ain't kidding.
Yeah, but I mean, if you want to talk about the concept of fairness, because that's the whole idea, it's a fair trial. Well, if it's fair, then anything the prosecutor should be able to do, the defense should be able to do a similar thing. And yet there is this huge disconnect, all sorts of things that prosecutors are allowed to do to get witnesses up there and testify on their behalf. And the defense is very, very limited in the things they can do.
I've always been wondering, where does the kangaroo court bit come from? Like, I don't get that idiom. So, I mean,
I'm not sure.
Because I can't, I mean, not maybe it's just some of her and all, but I just can't not imagine like an anthropomorphic kangaroo judge or something. I don't know why. God.
All right, according to Wikipedia, the first published instance is from 1850. It may have been popularized during the California Gold Rush along with Mustang Court. Ostensibly, the term comes from the notion of justice proceeding by leaps like a kangaroo. Okay, so you're leaping over, just like I said, you're making leaps of logic to say, okay, this guy was a dealer on Silk Road, therefore it's creating new dealers, therefore it's creating new users. That's hopping over all of those. Another possibility is that the phrase could refer to the pouch of a kangaroo, meaning the cord is in someone's pocket. The phrase is popular in the U.S., Australia, and New Zealand, and is still in common use.
That would do it. And yet, and as soon as I heard that about he got his sentence reduced, okay, so how is that, like, not bribery or something? You'd think they wouldn't call it that. But, you know, so many things wrong with this.
I think this is interesting, though. Before he was drug dealing, he was an IT consultant, and he made about $75,000 a year.
Nice.
At the peak of his Silk Road business, he was earning $60,000 to $70,000 a month.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And people wonder why some people become drug dealers.
I know.
Seriously. Good lord.
But it's all because drugs are illegal, and every time something like this happens, they rush in to crank it down, and, you know, what do they expect?
What happens to the price when you reduce supply? Basic economics. This isn't hard.
Hi, I'm Dave. You may recognize me from previous Bogosity episodes. However, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm also part of a podcast, the Superplex Brothers Podcast. Head on over to superplexbros.com. You can check out the podcast for video games and pro wrestling. We also have news, reviews, and editorials and all kinds of stuff just to talk about video games and pro wrestling and everything else that comes in between. So if you're into that, why don't you come check us out?
Now, this next one comes from Jeffrey Tucker of the Foundation for Economic Education, my second favorite bow tie wearer under the 11th Doctor and just ahead of Bill Nye.
What about Murray Rothbard, though? He rocked that tie, too.
Oh, that's true. He did, didn't he?
He did.
There are a lot of cool bow tie wearing people.
Yeah.
I might have to revise the list. But anyway, I've noticed that when I was growing up in the 70s, we used to have to rinse all our plates off before putting them in the dishwasher. Then they came out with dishwashers where you didn't have to do that. I mean, it could have like all this caked on stuff. You put them on there, they come out squeaky clean. The glasses come out without any spots on them and things like that. And lately, they kind of seem to have slid backwards.
Let me guess. Because of regulatory bogosity, right?
Well, that's what Tucker's saying. And now the Department of Energy is saying that loads of dishes cannot use more than 3.1 gallons per load. So this is just shades of toilets can't use more than 1.6 gallons per flush, which means that we have dirtier toilets now and we're flushing multiple times trying to get it down.
Didn't the science on this actually show that people ended up, because of the more flushings, that they're actually having to use more water than if they just let it be?
Yeah. Well, and again, I remember the toilets, you know, in my parents' house, they used, I think, like 2.5-3 gallons per flush. And I mean, they just, you needed to clean them every now and then, but nothing like I have to. I mean, it's ridiculous. You've got shower heads that say that you can't have more than this amount of water coming out of the shower head. And the result is people take longer showers.
Which would also partially explain why the shower head I have has such low pressure.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
If you were to put it upward, in order to direct the water upward, it only goes up by about 12, maybe 9 inches. So very low water pressure there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something else that I think is actually dangerous is there are regulations saying that your hot water heater can't be over like 120 degrees. That's basically a germ factory.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's what it is. It's an incubator.
Pretty much.
Whereas what they were doing before was putting it up to 140 degrees. And that is hot enough to kill all the germs.
Fun fact, I think the reason I've heard from my parents why they do that is basically because the water will be too hot for, like, children or infants. But I keep thinking, well, one, you can't just have the parents be in the room with them or teach them how to use the damn faucet or whatever.
If they're that small, the parents are going to be bathing them themselves.
No kidding. I mean, not to mention how, via the laws of thermodynamics, that means that you have a larger supply of hot water to use if you have to cool it down a little bit, you know?
Yeah, because if you only have your water at 120 degrees and you're taking a bath or a shower or something like that, you're using more water out of that hot water heater, which means it's filling up a greater portion of cold water and just has to use more energy getting it back up to temperature.
Yeah. It's also why I always laugh about how people go, but we need regulations to keep us safe and for the environment, etc. And yet, government is the biggest polluter in the world, and yet nobody seems to give a damn.
A lot of states actually prohibit the kind of hot water heater that a lot of them have come up with. They just jack up the temperature in the hot water heater to like 140, 150 to the point where it'll kill all the bacteria. And then on the way out, it mixes it with cold water. So what's coming out of the faucet is actually 120 degrees. But the regulations are written so that the water in the hot water heater can't be more than 120. So even though this would actually be a safe or even safer because it's not an incubator, they're not allowed to do it in a lot of these states.
Yeah, it's also why I roll my eyes whenever I hear someone say that we need the state for safety. I mean, come on.
So the DOE is saying that this method will save 240 billion gallons of water over 3 decades, reduce energy consumption by 12%, save consumers $2 billion in utility bills, and give everyone puppies and make more rainbows and everything.
Puppy kisses. But yeah.
Well, the economics in one lesson that Hazlitt wrote about, I think, applies to public policy as well. A bad policymaker only looks at the immediate results on intended groups. A good policymaker should look at all effects on all groups. You can't just make a change like this and expect that everyone's going to do the same. They're just going to go back to rinsing the dishes off in the water before putting it in. How much more water is that going to use?
Or if they were to do it their way, yeah, and then they'll have dirtier dishes, which is a contamination issue. Or if you live in the country where I do, you have ants. And if you live in the city, roaches and rats, which I'm pretty sure counts as a decrease in standard of living. Last I checked.
Oh, this is absolutely decreases in our wealth.
I'm reminded of a really insightful bit Hawkeye said when he made a post on DA about the environment and environmentalist movements. The rule of thumb he goes by is, A lower energy or a lower amount of resources used in your lifestyle should save money, ergo you shouldn't have to trick or force them into it. So if someone in government is talking about how, you know, oh, they're going to force them to save money and stuff, wait, I mean, that makes no sense. Don't they like having more money and stuff? Belief in belief much?
Yeah, you don't have to force people to save money, and dishwasher manufacturers have already been working on ways of efficiently using more water, well, use less water and still keep the dishes as clean as they are. The problem is when you do this by fiat, you don't leave them with much choice except to leave the dishes dirtier and have glasses with the spots on them and everything.
And of course, guaranteed, people will then look at these lower quality dishwashers and blame the free market, because this is what always happens.
Yeah, those greedy capitalists are just making all these cuts and making inferior equipment.
God, so predictable.
Now, he also talks about something that's been an issue for a while, another reason why our dishes haven't been as clean and our laundry hasn't been as clean, and he links to an NPR story about phosphates, and in particular trisodium phosphate. This is just a phenomenally good cleaner that the government said, okay, you can't have this in detergent anymore, but painters still use it, so you can get it in the paint section of your hardware store. Just add a little bit to your laundry detergent or to your dish soap or anything like that. It gets things so much cleaner.
Ooh, I'll have to look into that. Sodium phosphate.
Trisodium phosphate.
Sweet.
Now, the reason why they banned it in these detergents is because phosphorus is also a fertilizer. And what was happening was all this phosphorus was getting into lakes and rivers and streams, and it's fertilizer, so the algae grows a lot more, and the algae was growing so much that it was killing fish, and so this was an environmental issue. The problem is, when you wash something with a phosphate and send it down the drain, you're not sending it into lakes and rivers and streams. You're either sending it into your local water treatment plant, if you have municipal water, or, like in my case, it goes into the septic tank, and all the phosphates are going to do is go from there into my ground and help fertilize my ground and make the grass grow better. They're not getting in to the lakes and streams and everything that way.
Yeah, and I think in the article he did, he noted that, yeah, the research said that, yeah, there was no evidence that the phosphates in the dish soaps and detergents was doing anything to the lakes or the fish.
No, the phosphates were coming from farms that were spraying, you know, the fertilizer all over their crops and everything, and then it would rain and it would run off. And...
oh, but you see, that doesn't count because, you know, those are their corporate donors, right?
And I think he also makes an interesting point here that this might actually be a little bit sexist. Because when all these things started coming out, now follow his logic, when all these things started coming out in the post-war era, it was still pretty much the case that the women stayed home and did the household chores while the men worked. One reason for that was a full-time job back then. You know, you had to wash things by hand. You had to wash the dishes by hand, wash the clothes by hand. So then they started marketing all these products. They marketed the washing machines and the dishwashers and stuff like that to make moms work easier. And what that did was that meant that you didn't have to spend as much time doing household chores. And therefore, out of a husband and wife, you had the time for both of them to have a career and then both come home and do the chores together. But what this is doing is just making it slide back. You have to wash your dishes before you put them in the dishwasher. That's just making more work for whoever's doing the household chores.
And let me guess, because it's government, of course you'll never hear an SJW or one of the more modern feminists complain about this. Yeah, pretty much the only time I ever hear them complain about government is basically about it not giving them free goodies to everyone else's expense.
Yeah, pretty much.
I still remember you telling me that, I don't know, the second wave of feminists, like in the 60s or whatever, who are more about empowerment, but I don't know how true that is, but if so, damn, the movement has really slid.
Well, just look up Women's Lib or Women's Liberation. That's what the whole movement was about. And to them... it wasn't slut-shaming to go after someone like Zoe Quinn, you know, who slept around with people at Kotaku and Steam and other places in exchange for favorable reviews and getting your games greenlit. They were against that sort of thing. Women shouldn't sleep their way to the top. The more women sleep their way to the top, the more they hold back the actual women of talent who can actually get there on their own merits.
Like Miroji Ruart and the woman whose name is, who goes by Science Babe. I can't pronounce her name. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, or Christina Hoff Sommers or someone like that.
Yeah, she's another really good one. Yeah, she's probably one of the only feminists, well, that I know of, self-identified, that I'm going to have to say is awesome.
But I mean, I just look at so much of New Wave feminism and think of just how much that goes against what the women's lib movement was all about when I was growing up. This whole victim mentality thing. Oh, we're so oppressed. We're victims of the patriarchy. Government, pay for our contraceptives. They would have fucking hated that. They would have hated the idea that you have to provide contraceptives for women because they can't get it on their own. They would have hated everything about that.
Folks, if I have to pay for my lube and condoms, you have to pay for that.
Now you can make Amazon purchases with Bitcoin by going to purse.bogosity.tv. That's P-U-R-S-E. Moreover, most purchases can be made at a discount. Save an average of 20% just by buying from Purse, or get even greater discounts by linking your Amazon wish list. Go to purse.bogosity.tv. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. And now it's time to auto-tune this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week it goes to Lisa Monaco, Obama's Homeland Security Advisor, for her official White House response to the petition to pardon Edward Snowden. Quote, "Since taking office, President Obama has worked with Congress to secure appropriate reforms that balance the protection of civil liberties with the ability of national security professionals to secure information vital to keep Americans safe." Right off the bat, a complete lie. It's not since taking office, it's since Edward Snowden revealed what was really going on. That was when this started. It's because of Snowden that he was doing this.
Isn't this the same president who backed the, what was it, like the TSA, the Patriot Act, or at least voted for it or something? Or
yeah, and in the Senate, yeah, and he voted for warrantless wiretapping and all the extensions and everything.
And of course, lest we forget, the guy who promised to close Gitmo, it's still open and I think has even been expanded.
Quote, "Instead of constructively addressing these issues, Mr. Snowden's dangerous decision to steal and disclose classified information had severe consequences for the security of our country and the people who work day in and day out to protect it." Who? Who? Give me a name! Give me a name of one person who was harmed by Snowden's revelations other than politicians who were embarrassed at the illegal things they were doing to the American people.
Well, even if they were right about that, and Snowden did put someone in danger by revealing this stuff like that, why is it then that cops can make fake identities and steal your crap, and it put you in legit danger? And, oh, but that's just okay, oh, you know, it's for your own good. Yeah. Rules for thee, but not for me.
Quote, "If he felt his actions were consistent with civil disobedience, then he should do what those who have taken issue with their own government do. Challenge it, speak out, engage in a constructive act of protest, and, importantly, accept the consequences of his actions. He should come home to the United States and be judged by a jury of his peers, not hide behind the cover of an authoritarian regime. Right now, he's running away from the consequences of his actions."
I can't hold all this projection.
Lie, 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 lie. She knows perfectly well that if Snowden comes back home, he will not get a fair trial by the jury of his peers. He will get a secret trial under the Espionage Act where he will not be allowed to say the reasons why he did it, will not be allowed to point out that the things that the NSA was doing that he revealed were illegal, not be allowed to make any sort of defense at all. She knows this. And so does Rand Paul, and so does Hillary Clinton, and so does everyone else who makes this bogus argument. They are lying.
Well said. No, Barry, no person who is writing this inane bullshit. He did the right thing. He was holding you accountable for your actions.
Yeah, like I'm sure he really wanted to go and live in the Russian airport for however long it was he was
and
there.
And leave a job that was paying him, like, what, $100,000 a year plus benefits? Dang!
Yeah, and leave his family, leave his girlfriend. Yeah, that's not facing any sort of consequences.
Yeah.
The word is exile, people.
Mm-hmm. And the next bit just made me laugh. We live in a dangerous world, okay? Well, no thanks to them.
Yeah, because she's making it that way. And her boss, Obama, and all the Democrats and Republicans, they're the ones making it that way.
We continue to face grave threats like terrorism. Yeah, and how many people have died since 9/11 in police attacks?
We continue to face grave security threats like terrorism, cyber attacks, and nuclear proliferation. Yeah, and that's just from our own government.
No kidding. I'm sorry, but I always roll my eyes whenever I see folks in the U.S. government or who support our nuclear weapons program bitch about, like, oh, well, Iran is going to get a nuke. Yeah, this from a guy who supports or who has over 5,000 of them and who has actually used these ghastly weapons to murder innocents.
Yeah. Even though they're telling all the same lies about Iran that they were telling about Iraq. Oh, they've got all this nuclear material. They don't have anywhere near enough to get anything weapons grade in like the next 500 years or something like that. They're pointing out, ooh, they have this stuff that they've enriched up to 20% when it needs to be like 90% to be weapons grade.
Okay, I'm not even a chemistry major, and even I know that in order to purify something from 90% to 20%, it gets harder and harder the purer it gets.
Right. It's a lot harder to go from 85 to 90% than from 15 to 20%. But that was because the medical reactors that they were going to use that in required 20% U-235. And after it was done, they oxidated it. And you can't enrich it anymore once it's been oxidated. I mean, just lie after lie after lie after lie after lie. They have abided with every single term of the Non-Proliferation Treaty and more. They have agreed to do things like reduce the number of centrifuge rotors to 7,000. That's not much, people. It sounds like a big number, but it's not much. It'll barely be enough to...
Is it over 9,000 fallacy to act like it is that big?
It's not even over 9,000. It's 7,000.
Well, you know what I mean.
But yeah, I mean, it's just they're agreeing to something that would just basically have their uranium energy systems just kind of limp along with a bare minimum, and it's still not enough for the likes of people like Rand Paul and all these warmongers.
The only other thing I can say is something tells me, even though we didn't address all of every word of those quotes, I suspect that pretty much every other word, including the ones we didn't address, are also full of crap.
Yeah, pretty much. So all of that makes Lisa Monaco this week's biggest Bogani minute. History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's LibertyClassroom.com. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, LibertyClassroom.com teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials, and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit libertyclassroom.com. And now let's dehumidify this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
And this week it goes to Marie Lodi of Jezebel.com, and I'm not even going to try to be coy and preface it like I usually do. I'm just going to say it. She thinks air conditioning is sexist.
And even worse, is a sexist conspiracy.
Of the patriarchy.
Damn you, patriarchy! 116-1111.
So she starts off just completely and utterly wrong. Science has already told us that women feel more sensitive to cold temperatures. And if you click on her link, the first two sources she says are anecdotal. And the third source is one that says that men actually aren't warmer than women. It was something like they were going around with, you know, one of those heat cameras and pointing it at people. And on average, the women's skin was like 3 degrees warmer than the man's skin. And you
well,
know.
First off, okay, they do realize that there's no limit to the amount of layers you can put on clothes, but there is definitely a limit to how many I can take off. And if I take off too much, I go to prison for indecent exposure.
Yeah, that'll be important later on in our comments.
Oh, God. The second thing, going back to Hawkeye's little comment regarding saving money being something that you don't have to force people to do, and, oh, they're patriarchy men in business, oh, there's a conspiracy. Okay, but then why is it that they're going to spend even more money to keep the temperatures even lower? So basically, profits are everything to these people, you know, evil, greedy capitalists and business owners. Oh, unless it's for something that doesn't fit with my other narrative. That doesn't count. Consistency. You'd fail at it.
Well, she talks about something that Petula Dvorak wrote over at the Washington Post. I probably mangled that name. Because Washington Post is so difficult to pronounce, you know. But anyway, she says that cold office temperatures are yet another example of the patriarchy dominating an environment.
Damn you, patriarchy!
And she did this about as unscientifically as possible just by talking to men and women on their breaks away from the cubicles. The women were thawing out, trying to soak up the warm weather. When the men were asked if the temperature inside their offices was too, they had no issues. How nice for them.
Yeah, lady, listen carefully. The plural of anecdote is not data.
Exactly. Quote, Dvorak observes that the women are dressed appropriately for summer weather, but once they step inside, they have to resort to cardigans and pashminas, whatever that is, to keep from freezing. Okay, in addition to what you said earlier about how it's easier to put clothes on than take them off, how many of the men in these office environments have to wear a coat and tie because of the dress code?
No kidding.
I mean, when I worked in an office, I would have loved to be able to say, okay, you don't have to wear a coat and tie. You can wear short sleeve shirts and be cooler if you want.
To put it this way, I'm not wearing pants right now or a shirt. I would love to be able to work like that, but I can't because reasons.
Yeah, I mean, you work from home. You can work in your underwear. Who cares? As long as you're not, you know, on the camera or anything.
Well, it depends on what kind of work you do, but let's not go there. Jeez.
Well, it's like probably TMI, but when I was filming the mobster segments for my latest atheism and libertarianism video, so I had the nice, you know, black suit, black tie, black shirt, which was really, really hot. I just had shorts on.
Oh, jeez.
Because, I mean, you couldn't see under there anyway. Why should I burn up wearing, you know, long pants, too, that you're not going to see?
I thought you were going to say that you were naked, like, from the waist down or something, but...
No, that's a little too much even for me. It's just, it's ridiculous. And you know what? I'd be willing to bet that weight makes more of a difference than your gender, because if you're a larger person, you're going to hold more heat.
Absolutely. And not to mention that weight actually correlates pretty tightly with total metabolism. Simply put, the heavier you are, by the laws of thermodynamics and basic physics, any kind of actions or movements you do require more energy, since it's more mass that's being moved or accelerated.
Well, even just more simple than that, if you have two objects that are the same temperature, the more massive one will have more heat.
Well, yeah, that's another good point, too. Yeah.
So, she says, men should just wear lighter clothing in the workplace, like some nice linen and seersucker. Problem solved.
We would, if we had the choice for that in some places, lady. But dress codes are still a thing.
But it's like, they don't want to have to change what they're wearing because that's the patriarchy, so the solution is men should have to change what they're wearing.
But that's not, I don't know, matriarchy or whatever. Oh, well, no, that's different, apparently, because potato.
Yeah. You know, what I think is interesting is going through these comments underneath it, there are a lot of women there who are actually very reasonable in going against it, pointing off things like you pointed out, you can only take off so many clothes. What does it say when internet comments are more rational than the article?
Nothing good. Yeah, no, I always say, okay, when the internet commenters are, especially on YouTube, are more or on Twitter or Tumblr, are more rational than the OP, that's when you're really screwed. Okay, this is how we die.
And all of that is why Marie Lodi is this week's
Extraordinary.
Well, that wraps up this look at my crotch, look at my crotch, look at my crotch edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or at patreon.bogosity.tv. And feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Travis Retriever for joining
me. It was a blast, as it always is.
Until next time, here's a quote from Lori Zaganto. The rest of us have never embraced your victim mentality. We are not victims. We are people, the same way that men are. We are equal, yet different. We, unlike you, realize that is not mutually exclusive.
Well said.
The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution on Commercial Derivatives 3.0 imported license.
Bogosity.
Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
And another fun thought, speaking of women, I'm reminded of Erin Pisley. I'm sure I'm butchering her name. If you haven't already, look up what the feminists have done to her. To this day, they're largely unapologetic about it. Downright shameful.
What happened?
Apparently, what was it like, domestic abuse shelters or something such like that, for both not just women, but also for men, is apparently evil and is terrible and is an affront to them, because potato.
Because we can't admit that men are domestically abused, too.
Mm-hmm. Or raped. And yeah. Then, while simultaneously having the goal to laugh at prison rape jokes. So it doesn't happen, except for when it does, then it's hilarious. Yeah.
That's why you should be cautious of the phrase women's issues. They shouldn't just be women's issues, they should be people's issues.
Yeah, if that's the case, then I can kind of understand your concerns regarding the MRAs, if only just in the name. I don't know, I guess you probably see it maybe going in the same direction as them after about 50 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be inevitable when you put in the name like that. It's happened with every other issue where the divisiveness has been put in the name. That's what's happened.
Oh, God. Good point. Like with the gay riots or LGBT issues. And now, all of a sudden, look at what happens with them. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you have to bake a cake. It's like,
I wasn't aware that bakers were such an important commodity that they must be nationalized. I mean, maybe I'm an engineer technically, but I don't know, maybe I should become a baker. Maybe that way I can be considered important or something. I don't know. Whatever. Jeez.
I like how there was absolutely no other baker anywhere they could have gone to make
especially
their cake.
In the internet or the digital age. I mean, they couldn't have maybe had it outsourced, like to maybe a guy out further in the...
Well, cakes are a little bit more perishable.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, any, even small towns like where I live, you know, there's bakeries all over the place.
I can think of at least two, if you consider the ones in the supermarket bakeries. I don't know if they would do wedding cakes, but I don't know.
But I mean, even if you just talk about the ones that specialize in wedding cakes, they're around.